And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 8th, 2021. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I am doing well, and I'm enthusiastic to discuss the history of the Next Generation Climate Roadmap Bill, why we are excited about it, and what you can do to help make sure it gets passed by Governor Baker. Tune in.
So, Mariah, there is a pending story to tell. But before we do that, let me just say, people listening to this, hopefully over the next few days, we are in the midst of a national emotional moment where the Capitol was breached, and I think people across the country have some reaction to it. We just want to note it and say that however you're feeling, dear listener, is okay. I mean, this is a tough time for everybody. But that's the context that we're talking in, and we're trying to be we have good things to talk about, right, Mariah?
That's right. These are some bright moments and some crazy times.
Crazy times. So here's the story, Mariah. Let me tell you a long and up and down story about the climate roadmap bill, which you and I have been talking about now for a long time. It all begins in 2018 when the current session of the legislature began. That's a long time ago. There were various kinds of climate legislation proposals made. They went into the sausage factory of the Massachusetts State House, and they ground around through various committees. After 18 months, last summer, in July of 2020, those bills popped up as a bona fide climate bill. It had a lot of good stuff in it, but the House and the Senate in last summer were duking it out over details of a climate bill. Both the House and the Senate passed separate legislation that was more or less in the right direction, but not close enough. So they had to take the two bills, this is now early August, take the two bills, send them to what's called a conference committee, where the conference committee, composed of six legislators, would hash out the differences between the Senate bill and the House bill and produce a single version. Of course, that process went underground for another few months. So from August until the very end of 2020, and in fact popped up here in early 2021, this climate conference committee was creating a single draft of climate legislation. So early in this year of 2021, that bill popped up, was submitted to both the identical bill now, identical language was submitted to both the House and the Senate. Both the House and the Senate passed it, and we finally have climate legislation produced by the Massachusetts legislature.
Not just climate legislation, right? This is some of the most aggressive greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets in the country. It's making Massachusetts a leader ahead of California, right? California is so green, but this would make us actually even greener than California.
Which is great. Yeah, absolutely. Good news. And yes, so there's a lot of good stuff that I want to talk about, but I just want to set the context that this bill has now gone through the Senate and the House. It now goes to the Governor Baker. Okay. And if you remember that thing from the 1980s where the bill wants to become a bill and he's got to be passed by everybody, the bill has to be finally, right? This is conjunction junction, right? How does a bill become law? Right now, Governor Baker must sign this landmark climate legislation within 10 days or it just evaporates, poof, disappears. Right. It's been passed by the legislature. The governor's got to sign it. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about what's in this bill in the hopes that you, dear listener, will call Governor Baker to make sure that he knows that you want him to sign this legislation. and not let it evaporate after 2 years of hard effort to produce a pretty darn good bill. Right, Mariah?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So but let me put my party hat on until Baker passes it.
Yes. So let's go through what's in this bill, what makes it useful. Okay. So this bill is connected to other legislation in Massachusetts called the Global Warming Solutions Act, which has been amended and blah, 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 lots of stuff. But basically, the bill sets a target that in the year 2050, which is now only 30 years away, 29 years away, I guess I should say, 2050 coming soon, the state by law must have achieved net zero carbon emissions. Right, Mariah?
Right.
And that's pretty good nationwide. I mean, that puts us ahead of the curve, right?
It does. That's a big deal.
Now, if for people listening, you may say, what does net zero mean? Well, net zero means that the state is whatever carbon emissions are produced by doing anything in the state of Massachusetts are compensated by equal removal of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere by sources, by things that are attributable to the state of Massachusetts. That is to say, we have enough forests in the state of Massachusetts to absorb the CO2 that is still remaining and being emitted. So we're net zero emissions. For my money, that's at least a place to start. You can argue about the wisdom of that, but that's, if we get there, you know, okay, that's a good place, right?
Yeah. If every state in the United States did that, we'd be in a much better place since we produce so many emissions.
And I guess one of the complaints I've made over the years is that these different kinds of bills that are produced always have a hazy long time scale. That is to say, we're in 2021 now. We say, oh, yeah, Scout's Honor, we will be net zero carbon emissions by the year 2050. And then everyone can forget about it because 2050 seems so far away. But this climate legislation that's in front of the governor is different in the sense that it sets interim targets every 5 years and requires that the governor produce a plan to meet those targets. So there's going to be, if this law is passed, there'll be a 2025 revision, a 2030 revision, a 2035, 2040, 2045 revisions, targets, plans to get us to make sure and certain that we get ourselves to net zero by 2050. That's a good thing.
Ted,
right?
When you say revision, you mean that they're going to basically, we're going to take stock of our greenhouse gas emissions and figure out if we're on track for the goal.
Right. And so what's good here is that since this is all legal, if by the year 2025, we're not adequately down the curve of reducing carbon emissions, you can sue the pants off the state of Massachusetts and, you know, force things to happen in a way that because it's state law, as opposed to having something that is aspirational and doesn't come due for another 20 years. You get these check-ins where you can say whether or not we've succeeded. And if you haven't succeeded, there are consequences. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that at that point, each time my guess is going to be by the time we get to 2030, we'll be revising things. There'll be so much new technology, so many new things that, you know, the plans may change. The physics of net zero by 2050 remains the same, but your way of getting there might be modified a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's like this bill finally brings us to the 21st century, right? It's like we're actually thinking as if we could embrace some of the technological challenges and capabilities we should be moving toward.
Right. So during in each of these five-year cycles that are coming up, planned underneath this bill that we want the governor to sign, there are several areas of that they're focused on. One of the things is the encouragement that everything get electrified. That is to say, all of your house, that we generate more green electricity and use it in a way to sort of to get rid of some of the fossil fuel burning mechanisms, like in your car, for example. One of the other things is transportation. I mean, they'd be generally encouraging electric transport for everything.
And, you know, Ted, let me jump in here that some of the pushback that I've heard when I talk about electrifying everything is people say, well, so you have everything electrified, but the grid is still burning oil. It's still burning natural gas, or, you know, it's still burning fossil fuels. So if you're electrifying everything, you're not really, you know, using renewable energy. But there's two pieces of that that I think are important. The first is that the efficiency increases you get from electrifying everything help to reduce the demand, first of all. And then the second thing is that the Massachusetts, and it's part of this bill, has the plan to constantly be increasing the amount of renewable energy that's on the grid. So we're slowly, once you electrify everything, you're slowly moving down that path toward 100%, well, maybe one day, 100% renewable energy, because the renewable energy on the grid keeps increasing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's an excellent point that needs to be repeated, because it's just this easy toss off to say, oh, well, your electricity came from coal, so therefore don't buy the electric car. But you have to appreciate that this is a package that you're using electricity, but you're also planning to generate the electricity more cleanly. And that's the whole coordination that a government has to do, right? I mean, the other things that they'll be thinking about in the this 5-year cycle is heating and cooling, both in commercial places and in residences. And that brings up all kinds of issues about getting away from natural gas, or I should say methane, in the construction of new buildings, right? Basically, over the course of time, not allowing new buildings to be made that use natural gas. They would have to have heat pumps or be completely electrified or some other process, right?
Right.
And there's 5-year cycles, and there's very clearly laid out areas for attack for reducing carbon emissions in each of those 5-year cycles. And the bill goes even further. It has set in the year 2050 a net zero emissions by 2050. But it also says that by the year 2030, which is only 10 years from now, we will be 50% net zero. And then in the year 2040, we'll be 75% net zero, which is, again, an interim target that makes it much more credible that we're actually going to achieve these targets, because they are in timescales that are more, shall we say, threatening to people who are responsible for dealing with them, right? My son could be governor in the year 2045, right? So, but he's not worried very much about achieving the net zero goal right now, because he, you know, it seems like a long way away. So these interim goals are, I think, critical to the success of the whole project by holding ourselves accountable in the near term for things that we want to have happen in the long term. That makes sense?
Definitely. Yeah.
So the other thing that I wanted to run through is just the kinds of things that are some other specifics that are in the bill that are kind of interesting to talk about.
I've got to jump in because I'm very excited about the bill has an environmental justice component to it that makes me so happy to see, because that's one of the biggest problems often with the environmental movement in general, but in the communities that are most affected. And so for the first time in state law, it actually defines environmental justice populations and provides new tools for those communities. And I think it even has language that says any project that's likely to cause damage to the environment that is not insignificant and is within 1 mile of an EJ population would be required to file additional environmental impact reports that look at these equity issues. So it's really taking a big step in making sure that we're not dumping pollution into low-income communities or minority communities. And I think that's huge. And I'm so, so happy to see that.
Absolutely. I mean, just to bring that into very specific kind of terms, because, I mean, we have in front of us the natural gas compressor in Weymouth, which is near an EJ community. We have the transmission setup in East Boston, right? Which again is in an environmental justice community. There's a proposal for a biomass plant in Springfield, which is near an environmental justice community. So those things, those are like specific examples of where this law would kick in and require more protection for those communities. And yeah. I guess the other thing I would have to say in passing is that we talked kind of blithely a moment ago about the electrification of the transportation sector and how we're going to have lots and lots more electric vehicles. I think that's a bit of an environmental justice issue, because sometimes we think, everyone gets a Tesla, right? And that's not fair to people that couldn't afford a Tesla. Right. So if we talk about electrification of the transportation system, we have to include electrification of buses, trolley cars, all of the stuff that happens that would affect communities that may not be ready to run out and buy a Tesla. Right. And so we just want to keep that centered, I think is the new word. But I mean, while we talk about electrification of transportation and this EJ component, they're all wound together. Right. And it's important to keep that stuff in mind.
Very true.
I mean, some of the other stuff in the bill is that municipal light and power companies will now get greenhouse gas emissions targets. Why is that important? Well, municipal light companies constitute 10 to 15% of the emissions in the state. A municipal light company, you may know, is when an individual town owns the utility. Right? So it's not NSTAR or anything like that. It's an individual town. Those individual towns, which constitute a fair amount of the emission, are brought into the program, and they are going to get the benefits and the requirements of reducing their carbon emissions. The other thing that's in here, which is interesting, is that the renewable portfolio standard. See, these are all buzzwords, and sometimes you can lose track of. Renewable portfolio standard basically insists that the utilities buy more green power from windmills and solar panels. And by increasing that rate at 3% a year between 2025 and 2029, it almost guarantees that we get most of the way to the goal that we have. But it also implies that the amount of offshore wind is going to almost double. That is to say, we're currently contemplating 3.2 gigawatts of wind turbines off our shores. This bill would up that to 5.6 gigawatts, which is a fair amount of power. And that would then be part of the state's ongoing effort to lease, insist, make happen that we have wind turbines off our shores, which is a good thing. Right.
Yeah. And then again, that goes back to the, if we electrify everything and have everything running off the grid, but then we're slowly making the grid greener and greener. That's what that renewable portfolio standard does, is it keeps forcing the grid to have less and less fossil fuel. And if everything's running off of electricity, you start to green up the whole state.
Absolutely. And another way to think of it is that it's much easier to make the vehicles and the houses electric, because then you can focus your carbon reductions on the wind turbines, as opposed to trying to reduce the carbon pollution from every automobile and heater in every house in the state of Massachusetts, which is incredibly diffuse, thousands and millions of sources. You get to change the way the problem is solved. The other interesting thing is that this bill calls for is, again, it's all connected up, the idea that the utilities would think about providing hot water underground in place of the natural gas pipelines that are in your front lawn now. Instead of natural gas coming in, you would get hot water, which would then be the reference point for your heat pump. It's a marvelous way to take advantage of existing infrastructure, because there's pipelines, there's people who know how to do it, how to dig those pipelines, take care of those pipelines. It's a great opportunity going forward.
And safer.
It's safer. Absolutely. I mean, when was the last time your hot water blew up? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the other interesting thing, which is an MCAN issue, is that because of things like this effort to electrify houses, to use ground, to use heat pumps, et cetera, the building codes are under this law are modified so that the building codes of Massachusetts are brought up to date to be the most energy efficient that they can be. And that's another good aspect of this bill. So there's a lot in here. It's a good bill. What I think that it's important because of the environmental justice benefits, because of the push for renewable energy, because of the coherent interim planning that actually suggests this process might work. It's very important that this bill be signed into law. One of the things I'll do is I'll put up in the on the homepage the links to ways that you can contact the governor's office. There's a script in there. There's all kinds of information about what you would want to say if you want to send an email. It's an email template, basically supporting the signing of this bill. It's important that in the near term, right? We're now looking at January 8th. Within the next week, the governor's got to sign it. So we need to bring pressure on the governor to sign this landmark legislation is sitting on his desk waiting for him to do the right thing. Right, Mariah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to call as soon as the show airs.
And I've already called and tweeted. And so there you go. What we'll do is we'll put up, as I said, links on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have any questions, please send them to podcast@massclimateaction.net. That's the email, podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please let us know. Please rank us and let your friends know about our show so they can listen too. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade, shall I say, using the Massachusetts Climate Roadmap Bill, under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Well, Mariah, let me sincerely thank you for being here.
Oh, always a treat.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.